Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day. Today is the day.
Good morning. Today is the day. You are listening to Mornings with Carmen. I am Carmen LaBurge. Today is Ash Wednesday. It is, well, we're now on the countdown, 40 days until Easter. And if you are a person who, you know, you've never really observed this liturgical season of Lent, today's an opportunity to, first of all, take seriously the sin, which is the, I mean, I guess, let's just put it this way, like it's the reason that God sends Jesus Christ in order that for our sins, he can offer himself as an atoning sacrifice, in order that God's will can be accomplished in redemption, in order that we could be reconciled to God. And so if you celebrate Easter and if you celebrate Christmas, you could consider this period of preparation in lead up to Easter as an opportunity to take really seriously why Christ came in the incarnation and what Christ accomplishes on the cross in the crucifixion. And all of that is, I think, an important matter for us before we just, well, frankly, get all excited and enthralled over the resurrection, which, of course, we should be. And we are Easter people, and we are excited and enthralled over the resurrection. And it's what we declare to the world. And it's the reality that changes all of human history and history's course and gives us a redemptive a proclamation to share with others today through the living out of our lives. But are we, like, do we pause at any point during the year to just seriously consider the depth, the weight, the breadth, the reality of our sin and of sin itself? And so that's really what the period of Lent is about. It's a time to reflect and prepare. And so there will be lots of folks today who will have an ash-shaped cross on their forehead. And I want you to consider for a moment the opportunity for public conversation about your Christian faith that such a sign gives you. Now, for those of you who wear a cross around your neck every day, you might as well be having an ashen cross on your forehead. Like, right, it's the same kind of proclamation. It's one of the ways in which we publicly declare to the world that we belong to Jesus. And so it's a great opportunity today to connect with those who are walking around in the world with an ashen cross on their forehead. You could simply to acknowledge to them that you see it, that you know what it is. Or you might pause and say, hey, I recognize that, you know, you've been to an Ash Wednesday service. You know, tell me why it matters to you. Like, just start a conversation today instead of just letting the day pass without any acknowledgement or recognition. Like, use what the world gives in terms of this symbol and this day in order to engage in spiritual conversations with others. And if you haven't determined yet that there's something specific you want to do during Lent, and you've never done anything before, and you're saying, I don't really. I'm not Catholic, and so I'm not really sure I should be doing this. Here's the reality. You and I need some rhythms in our lives that help us engage in the spiritual life. And so let me advocate that if you don't want to fast from something, you could fast for something or into something or in advocacy of something. So I call it fasting forward, some way to advance the gospel in the next 40 days. By intentionally fasting forward in something. So you could fast forward in terms of drinking your coffee at home instead of drinking your coffee out, and all of the money that you would save by making coffee at home instead of drinking coffee out, you could fast forward into some sort of gospel advance, following Easter once all that money is accrued. So just some simple ideas like that, that would be my encouragement to you today. Okay. Next up, I'm having a conversation with Kara Powell, and here are the questions that I'd like to provoke you with in anticipation of this conversation. If you've got young people in your life, high school, college age people, would you like to be working with them mutually in a beneficial relationship, like growing with them into Christ? Not really sort of obsessively trying to control your teenager or young adult, but actually nurturing them to grow into God's image, into wisdom and faith. That's what my conversation with Kara Powell is all about. And that's next. Growing with, helping teenagers and young adults thrive in their faith, family, and future. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Privileged to be joined today by Dr. Kara Powell. For those of you who aren't familiar with Kara's work, let me direct you to her website, which is karapowell.com. She's the executive director of the Fuller Youth Institute and a faculty member at Fuller Theological Seminary. Kara is named by Christianity Today as one of 50 women you should know, and she serves as a youth and family strategist for Orange. She also speaks regularly at parenting and leadership conferences. Kara, welcome to Mornings with Carmen.
Well, thanks. It's great to be with you, Carmen.
Well, it's great to have you. And you have co-authored a book with Stephen Argue entitled Growing With, Every Parent's Guide to Helping Teenagers and Young Adults Thrive in Their Faith, Family, and Future. So we're going to just talk about it as Growing With, and people can check it out at growingwithbook.com. Let's just start with, why do we need another book on parenting teens?
Yeah, great question. Well, first let me say I'm a parent of teenagers myself. My kids are 18, 16, and 12. And as I think ahead to not only being a parent of teenagers, but also as they age into young adulthood, there's a part of me that's afraid that as my kids grow up, our families is going to grow apart. And not only that, as my kids grow up, my kids might grow away from God. And those are two fears that I have. And so Steve Argue and I wanted to write a book to help parents counter those fears with really practical research-based ideas to help parents know how, in the midst of kids maturing, they could continue to deepen their relationship in their family, as well as they could continue to help their kids deepen their faith journey.
So one of my observations in reading this book is this idea that as a parent of a teen, I am actually behind them in a lot of things. They are ahead of me. They know more about a lot of things. They have access to, so when you use the term growing with, this is not just about me as an adult helping someone else grow up. It is really about a family system growing together. Talk about that.
Yeah. And, you know, Carmen, that really ties well into how Steve and I define growing with. We define it as a mutual journey of intentional growth for both ourselves and our children that trust God to transform us all. So you're absolutely right. It's a mutual journey. I mean, we as parents, we're constantly learning and growing ourselves. I think parenting is one of God's great curriculums for us to teach us more about ourselves and what it means to follow Jesus. And we can share that with our kids, and we can learn so much from our kids in the midst of our growing faith relationships and our family relationships.
So how is it different for kids today than, you know, I'm 50. Obviously, I grew up in a different world than teenagers are growing up in today. How does their experience differ from the experience of their parents?
Yeah, in so many ways for kids, it feels like they're growing up faster. It's like there's this gas pedal. Life is faster. There's less institutional support. Families are working harder to make it. Kids are marinating in an environment of stress and anxiety. So, you know, as we say in our book, Growing With, for young people today, 14 is the new 24. Kids today, in some ways, are growing up faster than ever. But simultaneously, in the midst of this gas pedal that kids are experiencing, there's also this brake pedal, especially for young adults. many of the typical markers that have signaled a young person's transition to adulthood are happening 5 or more years later, and this is from U.S. Census data. Young people are getting married 5 years later, having babies 5 years later, becoming financially independent 5 years later, finishing school 5 years later, and so as a result, just as 14 is the new 24, and kids are in some ways more mature faster, simultaneously, 28 is the new 18, and they're taking longer to reach adulthood. So, you know, if you've ever driven in a car with 1 foot on the gas pedal and 1 foot on the brake pedal, that's a pretty herky-jerky ride, and that's what it feels like for today's young people, and that's what it feels like for today's parents as they're trying to navigate this new season for teenagers and young adults, and they need some help.
So I have a 15-year-old. I'm currently teaching her how to drive. I was like physically experiencing what you were just describing. So that
your heart start to beat a little bit faster there, Carmen.
Okay, so you have this verb that's called withing. We have a verb in our family called nervousing, and so I will tell her periodically. I'm like, "You're nervousing me." And that means I am responding to what you are doing with a rising level of anxiety. And so I appreciate the way that you and Stephen have approached this in the book. And let's just remind people, the book that we're talking about is Growing With. It's every parent's guide to helping teenagers and young adults thrive in their faith, family, and future. Kara Powell and Stephen Argue are the co-authors. You can check it out at growingwithbook.com. Kara, let's talk about that that verb, withing. What do you mean by withing?
Yeah, well, that is a verb that we made up, and as we looked at all the research on families' relationship with each other. And by withing, we mean a family's growth in supporting each other as children grow more independent. And, you know, as parents, especially of teenagers and young adults, as our kids are maturing and starting to move away from us, and Carmen, you're probably seeing this as a parent of a 15-year-old, you know, they move away in many ways. They move away emotionally. They move away relationally. Eventually, they probably move away physically. And as a parent, sometimes we take that personally. Sometimes we're tempted to withdraw because our feelings get hurt. We feel rejected. And so the image that we wanted to paint is, in the midst of your child's normal process of independence, how do you keep journeying alongside them? How do you, and I tell this story in the book with my 16-year-old, how do I be a wall that she can come back to? In the midst of my teenagers hurting my feelings, in the midst of normal everyday conflict that we have in our family, how can I be that wall that she and that my other daughter and that my son can come back to? How can I be that stable, supportive, consistent presence in their lives? And so, you know, we interviewed 75 parents from around the country and got so many practical ideas. If I can just share one of the things that great parents were quick to do in order to establish withing, they were quick to say two words: I'm sorry. They were quick to apologize to their kids. And I'll tell you, thanks to our research, I feel like I'm apologizing to my kids about every 48 hours. And if you were to read a transcript of what I say, the words aren't all that terrible. It's usually my tone of voice that is my problem. And so I'm constantly apologizing to my kids because I want to keep the slate clear between us and them. And I want to also give them a picture of the grace and mercy of Jesus Christ, and that we can constantly seek forgiveness from our Lord and Savior when we blow it in relationship with Him also. So, you know, one of the keys to good withing in a family is that parents lead the way by apologizing to their kids and in front of their kids.
I just love it. Kara, let's continue this conversation in just a moment. You are listening to Mornings with Carmen. I am Carmen LeBurge. My conversation partner, Kara Powell. We're talking about the book, Growing With, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LeBurge, continuing my conversation with Kara Powell about the new book, Growing With. She co-authored it with Stephen Argue. The subhead is Every Parent's Guide to Helping Teenagers and Young Adults Thrive in Their Faith, Family, and Future. Kara, we've already touched on withing. You've got some other verbs in here, faithing and adulting. I would love to explore those as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, faithing is not a verb we made up. Sharon Delos Parks, another wonderful researcher, first used the word, to my knowledge. But the way that Steve Argue and I define faithing is as owning and embodying our journeys with God as we encounter new experiences and information. And here's, you know, even if for your listeners who don't remember that definition, here's what I would love for them to remember about faithing, is that it's not just a noun, it's a verb. Because faith is not just a noun, it's a verb. And a lot of times as we're parenting teenagers and young adults, we see shifts in their faith, and that can fill us with anxiety. When in reality, that's just a normal part of a young person's faithing process. It's a normal part of them coming to own their faith, them coming to question their faith, them coming to wrestle with their faith, them coming to, say, choose their own church and faith community instead of the one that was inherited from their parents. And so, you know, really core to faithing is that we as parents and grandparents and step-parents and caring mentors, that we're okay with our kids' tough questions about God. You know, in other research we've done at the Fuller Youth Institute, we've seen that 70% of youth group graduates have tough questions about God. 7 out of 10 admit to having big questions, big struggles in their faith. Now, before our research, that would have freaked me out as a parent and as a pastor. Oh my goodness, so many young people are walking around with tough questions. But here's what we've seen in our research. When young people have the opportunity to express and explore those tough questions, that's actually correlated with greater faith maturity. Or put more simply, doubt isn't toxic to faith, silence is. So as a parent trying to live out our research, one of my favorite questions to ask my teenagers is, what do you no longer believe that you think I still believe? And then the inverse, what do you now believe that you think I don't believe? Because I want to communicate to my teenagers, especially as they become young adults and get ready to move out of the house, that, hey, your faith is a journey. It's a verb. It's going to keep growing and evolving. And I want us to be able to talk about it.
Okay, let's do those again. What do you no longer believe that you think I still believe? And what do you now believe that you think I don't believe? Those are
absolutely two
great questions.
Yeah, aren't they? And, you know, I learned them from my co-author of Growing With, Steve Argue, who has been asking his teenager and young adult daughters those questions for years. And, you know, sometimes your kid will say, actually, my faith hasn't changed that much. You and I are still on the same page. But recently I asked my 18-year-old that question, and he had a couple bullet points for us to talk about. And I was so glad that I asked the question and that he could calmly, you know, not in the heat of the moment, but as he and I were driving in the car together, he could explain to me some of how his faith is shifting because his faith is a verb. And by the way, so is mine. So, you know, when we paint in our families faith as a verb, it also gives us as parents more opportunities to share about our own faith journey and the lessons that God is continuing to teach us.
Well, Kara, I think it's just honest that as adults, we would acknowledge that, you know, we have questions that probably went either ignored or pushed aside when we were young. And some of those questions we still have today. And so why do we think or expect that our kids wouldn't have really serious questions? They are living in a much more culturally diverse and religiously pluralistic environment than any of us ever lived in a generation ago. And we don't even inhabit it in the same way they do now because we're not in nearly as diverse environments as they are. Can you just talk a little bit about the reality that teenagers and young adults are living in and how it differs from the one that you and I live in as, you know, maybe like full-blown adults?
Yeah, absolutely. Teenagers and young adults, they're just exposed to so much more. You know, they're carrying around a computer in their front pocket that, Carmen, you and I didn't have access to. And so they know so much more about different faiths. They know more about what's going on in the world. I try to tell my kids some news story, you know, as we're driving to school, and they've already heard it because they saw it on BuzzFeed or, you know, they already got the message about it on their phone before I even have a chance to tell them at 7:20 in the morning. And you know, and there's a lot of upsides to that. You know, I think there's so many gifts to technology and how our kids are exposed to so much and so many diverse cultures. One of the things, though, that we're certainly seeing with young people is a rise in mental health challenges. And, you know, as somebody who studies adolescents and works with parents and church leaders, I don't go a day without somebody asking me a question or me seeing new research on suicide, anxiety, and depression. And we certainly do talk about that in our Growing With book. Because, you know, when I was in high school, if I wasn't invited to a Friday night party, I maybe heard about it on Monday when I showed up at school. For teenagers today, when they're not invited to a Friday night party, they see it unfolding in real time on their devices while they're by themselves in their rooms on Friday night. So, you know, interestingly, the risk behaviors that young people experience with others tend to be decreasing. And this is something to celebrate. Teenage alcohol use, teenage sexuality in terms of sexual intercourse, teenage partying behaviors, those behaviors have actually slightly decreased in the last 8 years. But teenage suicide, anxiety, and depression, which tend to be risk behaviors that a teenager experiences on their own in isolation, those have actually increased. So a lot of parents and church leaders are looking for help and looking for answers because they don't know what to do when they're seeing their young person stressed, feeling isolated, and feeling anxious.
So if you are in that category of humanity and you want some resources to help you grow with your young person, we're really excited about offering the Growing With book. And I actually have some copies to give away. You can text me at 877-933-2484. You can email me, Carmen@myfaithradio.com, to enter the drawing for the copies that we have of the Growing With book. You can check it out online at growingwithbook.com. You can connect with Kara at karapowell.com. Kara, in the minute or so that we have left, I just want you to encourage not only parents, but other adults, because I know that the young people who I have access to are not just my own kids, but every other kid who just needs an interested adult. So can you just speak to that?
Yeah. Parents, I have great news for you. There is nobody who loves your kid like you. There is nobody who knows your kid like you. And God has put you in your child's life to shape, form, influence your child. And that's a marathon. That's not a sprint. And especially for parents of adolescents who, you know, that can be a tough season. Research shows that as your child leaves adolescence and becomes that young adult, your relationship with them is going to improve, and you're going to see some even more hope and even more relational connections. So just keep being faithful. And not only do kids need amazing parents who unconditionally love them, but kids need other mentors. And so for every adult who's listening, whether or not you're raising a kid or have raised a kid, you probably know a child or a teenager or a young adult. In fact, you're probably thinking of them right now, who could use a text from you today saying, hey, I'm thinking of you and praying for you, who would love it if you showed up to their swim meet or their Girl Scout event or showed up at the next play to cheer them on and just for them to know that you are on their team. So I'm sure all of us can think of adults, or most of us can think of adults, who did that for us when we were young people, and now we have the chance to do the same.
Kara Powell, thank you so much for joining us today on Mornings with Carmen. The book is Growing With. You can check it out at growingwithbook.com. We'll be right back. Okay, so sticking with the theme of young people and high school and college, up next, I'm going to talk with Hunter Baker from Union University about what's going on across the country in relationship to kids doing things that are just overtly racist and anti-Semitic. That's up next here on Mornings with Carmen.
What's the mark of a true Christian? Just showing up in church every Sunday? Not so. This is Jim Garlow. Just because you show up for church, carry a Bible, pay a tithe, or show up for a small group, that doesn't necessarily make you a part of the ecclesia, the universal church, the bride of Christ. That happens when you say, Jesus, come into my life. which in turn comes from your recognition of the sin that separates you from God. That signifies repentance, the one condition for salvation. But after that, the great promises of God are yours unconditionally, your sins having been paid for on the cross of Calvary, and Christ's righteousness imparted to your account. As we mark the beginning of the church season we call Lent, keep your eyes on the cross of the one who hung there so that you might have eternal life in heaven. I'm Jim Garlow.
You are listening to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. I am joined now by Hunter Baker from Union University. Hunter, welcome back.
Hey there. Thank you. Are the Beastie Boys growing on you yet?
It's not my favorite, but it's okay. We're still going to talk to you. So, all right. So I have been a little overwhelmed by the headlines in the last few days related to what I will describe as students behaving badly. So maybe we should start by letting folks know what has happened on the Berkeley campus. And then let's address these, I guess, revelations is the best way to describe it, of these high school students, both in Newport Beach, California, and in a community in Alabama just outside of Birmingham, who, you know, who are obviously engaged in what I would just describe as like openly racist and anti-Semitic activity. So tell us, you know, kind of give us a sense of what's happening in the youth culture on this front.
Well, let me say, first of all, that my suspicion is that there's probably kind of low-level activity like this going on most of the time. We live in a social media culture, so we know about it more than we usually do. But, you know, there's a sense in which we feel really disappointed because – we like to think that we have kind of moved past this sort of stuff, you know, that children have grown up in a culture that emphasizes non-discrimination and that makes it clearly a vice to engage in what we would call hate speech or something like that. But I'll tell you what I think is a big part of the problem. At least with regard to race and anti-Semitism, I think that we talk about it so much. You know, I know that I think that I'm actually probably swimming against the tide here. But you know, when I was a child, the big emphasis, you know, from Sesame Street on up was color blindness, that we should treat people as though their color did not matter. And I feel like that we have moved into a different phase where we discuss it all the time. And if you combine heightened race consciousness with godlessness, I think you get what Tom Wolfe called going back to blood. People will become more tribal. And I sometimes wonder if we're seeing something like that.
Well, that's certainly, you know, I mean, that's certainly consistent with the way if this German rage cage party that these students were having in Newport Beach, California, I mean, if we look at that, then that is what we're seeing. And I would concur with you. Let's turn our attention to how adults, particularly, you know, Christians, can respond to this. I don't know how, you know, you felt at your heart level, but man, my heart was broken for every parent of every single one of these students who have now in viral videos said and done things that every college they ever apply to will see, every job interview they ever go to, this will be addressed. Any person who considers ever dating any of these people in the future, they're going to see this. This is out there. It's attached to their names. Help me as let's imagine that I'm a friend of one of the parents of one of these teenagers or young adults. Help me not run away from my friend.
Well, and first, let's address, I mean, I grew up, maybe you did too. I'm 48. I grew up in the South.
I'm older than you.
Immediate. Oh, wow. I thought you were maybe younger than me.
There you go. Right answer.
I grew up in the period immediately following segregation, right? I was born in 1970. But my parents, I think, had a pretty strong sense of protecting me culturally. And they very clearly taught me that I should not be racist, say racist things, decide how I treated people on the basis of their color. And I'm grateful for that. I mean, every time I hear one of these stories, I think that, you know, man, that kid's parents may have let him down, because we do live in a culture where that's going to follow you around. Things are not so easily forgotten when they're captured on YouTube or something like that. But that having been said, yeah, I hate the way we treat people as being disposable. And as soon as some bad thing happens of this type, we act as though this person should never, ever be allowed to have a position of influence or never, ever be allowed to have responsibility because of this one thing they did. I think that's anti-Christian, and I think that it doesn't reflect the kind of forgiveness that we should have for people who do regret what they've done and who ask us to forgive.
I'm going to continue my conversation with Hunter Baker from Union University. We're talking, you know, we're talking about the reality of culture today, and we're talking about how we as Christians live in the midst of a broken culture full of broken people, and we are among them. And so we're going to talk after the break about the potential that the House could vote probably tomorrow to condemn anti-Semitism, what it means that we need to do that today in our cultural life together. And we're also going to revisit the conversation we had yesterday. If you missed the conversation about Better Angels, let me encourage you to grab that podcast. Go to myfaithradio.com, check out the podcast for yesterday's Mornings with Carmen, because Hunter Baker's actually engaged in that effort as well. That's all up next on Mornings with Carmen. So continuing my conversation with Hunter Baker from Union University. Hunter, you are involved with Better Angels. Yesterday, during this same hour, I had a conversation with John Wood and Rob Robertson of Better Angels. Tell us why you're involved and why I think we're hoping that the conversation that is so politically divisive today can actually like be bridged and healed by those of us who are willing to genuinely walk across and talk across the aisle.
Sure. I think that Better Angels is one of the most important civic organizations in America today. I wish that everybody listening would go to the website, would engage on social media and learn about it. Really, it is about the increasing ugliness, and I think it's a dangerous ugliness in our politics, that we don't simply disagree with each other, we actually demonize each other. You talked about anti-Semitism. One of the great dangers in political life is that we will come to view people who are not us, people we disagree with, or people who have a religion we don't have, as somehow less human than us, or other than human, subhuman. And I think we're in tremendous danger of doing that in our politics. And actually, you know, I mean, as much as progressives like to think that they are immune to this kind of thing, I think they are actually, to some degree, in more danger of it than people on the right, you know, particularly with the way they view Christians with regard to their view of human sexuality. So I have gotten involved in the group. It was very important to me at the beginning that joining Better Angels didn't mean that I was giving up my beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
What it meant was that I was committed to engaging in something like civic virtue, right? That I would have respect for people who with whom I disagree, that I would resist the temptation to demonize them or to be unfair to them or to think the worst of them. And I have been thrilled to see that as people get together for these kind of weekends and little conferences that Better Angels puts on, that they do begin to see that other people are human beings. You know, I particularly remember one clip where a woman, you know, she was what we call a blue in the Better Angels. There's reds and blues. She was a blue. She was liberal. And she said, I think conservatives are racist. You know, I don't see any reason that I should even talk to them. But she went to the event. And afterwards, she said, you know what? I found out that I liked some of these people. So I think that they do fantastic work.
So I just thought I would give you an opportunity to plug it since I know you're on the board. And it was it's a thrilling to me to know what's happening through their efforts. And so we just wanted to have the opportunity to share that again today and applaud them. Let's talk about the fact that we are having these conversations in America about anti-Semitism. I think I'm a little bit surprised that we're still having this conversation. And yet it seems to be really inflamed. So the House of Representatives could actually vote, probably not today now, but probably tomorrow, to condemn anti-Semitism. What does it say to you about where, you know, about the place to which we have arrived as a culture, that we need an open condemnation by the U.S. Congress of anti-Semitism in the year 2019?
A couple of things. First of all, I think that our historical knowledge is less good. I think that probably there are so many things that draw our attention that we probably read less history, think less about history than we have in the past, unless there's some movie that covers it. I suspect that for many students, the closest they get to knowing much about Nazis is by the correlate organization Hydra in the Avengers movies. so that's one problem. The other thing is that support for Israel or lack of support for Israel has become a major political issue. And sometimes if you oppose Israel for whatever reason, and sometimes people do for good reasons, that can end up translating into anti-Semitism. And I suspect that's part of what's going on is opposition to the state of Israel in many cases.
So, Hunter, you and I have about 2 minutes left. What do you want to bring to the table to this conversation today?
Wow. Here's what I would say. I would say let's try to take the long view for once. Let's stop just trying to react to everything. I think we have turned into such a reactive culture. What I teach is political thought. And what I would love is if people would try to be a little bit more philosophical, and let's connect that to trusting God, and let's just be calm in the face of the constant raging currents of our media culture, of our social media, and just take time to reflect. That's what I would say.
So you ought to stick around because I've got Miroslav Volf coming up at the bottom of the next hour. And that's what he and I are talking about. How do we actually restore?
Wow.
I know, right? So how do we actually restore our desire to think theologically and then think theologically in public and to restore the public discourse through that avenue? So, yeah, it's a conversation we'd love to hear.
That's a great choice. And you can tell him that one of your guests read one of his books and reviewed it for Christianity Today.
No, see, that's so fun. All right. Hey, Hunter Baker, thanks again for joining us today on Mornings with Carmen. You guys can check out what he's doing at Union University. He's helping us think in the public square with civic virtue. Thanks for being with us again today on Mornings with Carmen.
Thank you.
All right. I'll be I'm going to go grab another cup of coffee. Why don't you do the same? And then I'm planning to get into your business. I'm going to get into your business today in a conversation with Bill English. So if you are like me, you spend a fair amount of time calendaring, and calendaring is something that we as a family have to do pretty frequently. We got that dry erase calendar in our kitchen, and then we've got obviously calendars on our phones and those kinds of things. I'm wondering if you have done any calendaring lately related to sort of what have you got planned to enrich your own Christian life and your own walk of faith? We do a lot of calendaring at the beginning of the year, and we say to ourselves, hey, I'm gonna make a thorough study of Scripture this year. I'm going to read the Bible. How's that going? Maybe you need to do some calendaring related to that. Maybe you need a Bible. We're always giving Bibles away here at Faith Radio. And so if you need a Bible, we are giving away the one-year Devotions for Women with Jill Briscoe. And so you can go to myfaithradio.com and check that out. Also on the calendaring front, we've actually got a free Life of Christ online class that that starts pretty soon. It begins March 11th. So again, you can go to myfaithradio.com and you can register for the free Life of Christ online class beginning March the 11th. And then on March the 16th, we've got an opportunity for those of you who are in the Twin Cities at the University of Northwestern at St. Paul in the Knight Performance Hall. We're going to be celebrating at 7 p.m. on March the 16th, the 70th anniversary of Faith Radio. So if you are in the area and want to join us for that, again, tickets are on sale at myfaithradio.com. And then looking a little further ahead on the calendar, I know we're calendaring. This is what families do. And so, you know, looking a little further on the calendar, in the middle of July, July 12th and 13th, again, at the University of Northwestern St. Paul, we're going to have the Northwestern Christian Writers Conference. You get to schedule a one-on-one with a literary agent, publisher, or author. You get to gain personalized feedback on your writing and your writing career. There's all kinds of breakout sessions, and you get to network with industry professionals and other writers at the Northwestern Christian Writers Conference. That's July 12th and 13th at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. And again, you can register for this one at NorthwesternChristianWritersConference.com. You got to type it all in, NorthwesternChristianWritersConference.com. What's on your calendar today as you think through your day? Thank you for calendaring Mornings with Carmen in and what you're doing and where you're spending your time. I count it a privilege every single day to get to talk with you about the things of faith and to encourage you in your life of faith, in your relationships with others, and in particular in the advance of the gospel. And remember, that's what you're out there doing. I'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.